I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind, The Three Jewels, A Personal Perspective.
Against the Stream, Santa Monica. Now, I'm very grateful to Matthew for inviting me. I haven't given talk to such a large group of people for a very long time. And my preferred way of proceeding is through questions. You have a mic? Yeah. So I'm just going to say a few words, and then I'm going to pick up one question that I've already received, and I know at least one other person has some questions, right? Good. And then we'll go from there. A few years ago, I attended a panel discussion on the role of religion in a global society at USC. And a professor of Islam from Loyola Marymount was on the panel. And his mentor in theology was a Presbyterian minister in Toronto, Ontario. And on one occasion, that minister's son, and he was a prominent theologian, came to him and said, I'm leaving the church. His father didn't try to persuade him not to, which under the circumstances is a little remarkable. What he said was, if you do, you will lose the vocabulary with which to talk with your friends about the things that are most important to you. You will lose the vocabulary with which to talk with your friends about the things that are most important to you. I thought that was very intriguing. Now, it may not be apparent, but in that sentence, you have, maybe perhaps a little buried, the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. What is Buddha? Well, one way to consider Buddha is that it is our vision of how we'd like to be. It's our vision of the way we want to experience life. That's why you're here, isn't it? To find a different way of experiencing life, because there's some problem in the way you're experiencing it right now. I think that's what brings us all here. So that's one way to consider Buddha. It's our vision for the possibility of a different way of experiencing life. And the vocabulary that we have for talking about that, well, that's the Dharma. the teachings, the words, the vocabulary. And we don't do this alone. We don't do it in dependence on others, but there's a shared intention. This is something which each of us, in our own way, is intensely interested in. Interested enough to come here this evening. Interested enough to spend some time each day just sitting quietly, finding our way, whatever that is. And we come together because it is helpful to meet with like-minded people, some of whom have more experience, some of whom have less, but each has something to contribute to that conversation. So, that's one way of looking at why we are here this evening. Now, what can you expect from practice? A friend of mine, good friend, was asked a very similar question after he had completed a 3-year retreat. Now, 3-year retreat is a certain form of training in the Tibetan tradition. And he was asked, what was it like? Well, it's a little hard to sum up 3 years in a simple sentence. And he said it was the most wonderful and the most disappointing experience he had had in his life. The most wonderful and the most disappointing. A little difficult to put those two together, isn't it? How many of you have experienced some disappointment in your practice? Yeah, that's the majority of people in the room. And how many of you have discovered the possibility of something wonderful in your practice? Yeah, a similar number. So you know what this person was talking about. Something wonderful and something intensely disappointing at the same time. And that's actually how it is. For me, if I speak personally, the wonderful part is you actually discover the possibility of experiencing life differently. It starts by forming a different relationship with these things we call thoughts. And then little later on, these things we call emotions, and so forth. And through our practice, we get glimpses now and then, and we don't have to struggle with all of it all the time. We can just let it be, and somehow it takes care of itself. Not quite sure how. We could go into that, but that takes us into some deep waters. But it does take care of itself. And then there's the disappointing part. We glimpse that possibility. We may even experience it, but we keep falling out of it for some reason or other. Over and over again, and we don't seem to be able to do anything about it. In my own training, in my own practice, probably like some of you, I've had immense difficulties. Which can be summed up in a simple phrase. pain that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. One of the great helps for that was a passage from Suzuki Roshi's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He talks about one of the suttas, the sutras. I think this is one of the middle-length discourses, but I'm not a Pali scholar, so I don't really know. But in this, Buddha is describing four horses. The first horse gallops at the indication of its rider, just goes. The second horse gallops when it sees the whip being raised. The third horse gallops when it feels the whip on its skin. And the fourth horse doesn't gallop until it feels the pain in the marrow of its bones. Now, which of the four horses would you like to be? As Suzuki Roshi says, when we hear this, we all want to be the first horse. And if we can't be the first horse, well, we'll settle for the second. And then he says something very interesting. This is what I like about Suzuki Roshi. He says, which horse do you think Buddha will have the greatest compassion for? The first, second, the third, or the fourth. He goes further. He says, in your practice, you're going to find that the fourth horse is probably the most useful. I was going to write a book called The Fourth Horse, because I can relate to this very well. And then he says, and then this is what I want to pass on to you. Through your very imperfections, you will find your firm way-seeking mind. Through your very imperfections, you will find your firm way-seeking mind. Thank you for speaking up. Through your very imperfections, I don't mind saying it three times either. Through your very imperfections, you will find your firm, way-seeking mind. That's Suzuki Roshi's English, but way-seeking, that may be the part you are missing. Now, it took me a very long time to appreciate what he was talking about. I could relate to this fourth horse business really well, but I didn't really understand. I don't think I understood what he meant. And if I did, I didn't like it. We hear things about enlightenment. We hear rumors that there is this thing called enlightenment or awakening or what have you. I don't believe them anymore. But we want, whatever it is, it sounds really good and we want it. But actually that's somewhat irrelevant. And I can explain why in a few moments. What is relevant, what is very, very important, is what we bring to that quest. Because in that quest, we are acting on a clarity, a knowing, whatever you want to call it, but you probably can't put into words, and you probably can't communicate to anybody else, But it tells you, I need to go this way. Does anybody know what I'm talking about here? Okay. And I don't say this lightly at all. Our connection with that clarity and knowing is actually brought out through the difficulties that we face in this path. And that was about the last thing I wanted to understand. But here today, I can say to you, it is true. You will come to know what you know through how you meet the difficulties in your life. And thus one is counseled over and over again in Buddhist practice to welcome the difficulties. And I just have a big problem with that, but it's true. How big the problem did I have with that? There's a poem by Stephen Crane. I met a creature in the desert, naked, bestial, holding his heart in his hands and eating of it. Is it good, friend? I asked. It is bitter, he said, but I like it because it is bitter and because it is my heart. That's a poem I could really relate to. And through all of this, and virtually everybody I know who's practiced and has some solidity in the practice has experienced something pretty similar. Maybe I just hang out with the wrong people, but that's another story. In the depths of your doubt and despair, you have nothing but your knowing. And then you realize that you don't need anything else. And the whole practice is about getting rid of all of the stuff that prevents us from knowing our own knowing. Now, I said that enlightenment, I didn't believe in it anymore. This was brought home to me by a short piece by a Korean Zen master, Sung Sen, who wrote that as lay people, it's not our job to get enlightened. We leave this for the pros, the monks, the nuns. They're practicing all the time. That's their job. As lay people, our job is to function properly in our lives. And then in the last paragraph of this article, he slips in, mind you, the purpose of getting enlightened is to be able to function properly. So, that's all I'm going to say.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.